Riding a tom-tom, a double fat bat, a pork chop sandwich, laying on the floor. Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN. And in studio, we have Mike Gebert, editor of Fooditor 99.
The Fooditor 99, new edition.
New edition. And I like this. You were on the show once with when we were talking about the Chicago Food Encyclopedia. But so you sent me the new. Is this a second edition?
Second edition.
So what I like about this, it's kind of like our show. It's not a pretentious book. It's very easygoing. You know, you say here it's a guide for Chicagoans and not tourists. It's kind of on the neighborhood level. Pick it up on that.
Exactly. I mean, and it's really if you asked me, you know, where should I go eat, which people do all the time. Somebody did this morning. This is like listening to me talk about it. This is the places. At every kind, you know, some of it's high-end stuff, but a lot of it is neighborhood Mexican and Italian and whatever else it might be. It's those kind of places to check out. It's the places to try a little harder, you know, where the guy makes it himself instead of buying it off a truck and that kind of thing.
And what gave you the idea to do this? I mean, there's a lot of stuff like this out there, so how'd you find your niche?
Yeah, well, you know, there used to be a lot of guidebooks. I feel like there are fewer books now. It's more things online,
yeah.
You know, and it's like Yelp. And there's two problems with Yelp. One is you can't really carry it in the car very easily. And the other is it's so comprehensive that it's not easy to make your way into it. And this is deliberately, it's 99 choices. It's 99 places, sort of the best, but it's more like, what am I excited about right now all over the city? And that's like, it's a good long list, but it's not so long that it's not manageable.
And were you with LTH?
I'm one of the people who started it.
Is that still around?
Yeah,
I haven't seen it. Tell us what LTH was.
Well, it was a great thing when it started. It was a place where anybody could talk about food. And for me, it just really accelerated how fast you could learn about something. I mean, you put up a question about, hey, what does it mean? You go in this Mexican place and it says, hecho a mano tortillas.
Yeah.
You know, what's going on there? And 2 days later, you're an expert, you know, on handmade tortillas in Mexican restaurants because all these people would share all this information about it.
And so when did that start? When did LTH start?
2004.
So where did you grow up?
I actually grew up in Wichita, Kansas.
Okay.
Which gave the world both White Castle and Pizza Hut. But my parents were fairly cosmopolitan about food. My mom watched Julia Child, and curiously for Irish Catholics, we always kind of had Jewish deli food around the house, which wasn't entirely easy in Kansas. So I was always curious about it, and it was one of the reasons I wanted to come to the big city. I worked in advertising for a lot of years.
That's right.
And the various reasons that I wanted to come to a place like Chicago, but one of them was certainly just all the culture, all the food culture, all the different kinds of culture, and just exploring a bigger place. So, you know, this was kind of, and back when I did that, there were a lot of books like this that I kind of used to help me find my way in the city.
That's where I was going with that question.
The first thing you do, you find a neighborhood and you want to know what it's about, is you get something to eat.
Yeah.
And that's going to be your entry point into what the neighborhood is about. So for me, it was partly about creating the kind of thing where people can pick it up and pick some places in a neighborhood they don't know, you know, like Chinatown or whatever, and start to make a discovery of that part of the city.
When did you come to Chicago?
It's been almost 30 years.
Now. 30 years.
Yeah.
So that's right. That was my question. What was your reference point then? Did you read Pat Bruno or
I remember there was a book called Cheap Chow Chicago. I had a Chicago magazine guide at the time that I picked up. To kind of just start exploring different parts of the city. I don't know. I mean, there's so many. The Zagat guides were, and that was one of the first kind of populist things where people had a chance to kind of comment like reviewers did. So, you know, different ones over the years. And then those kind of went away. And that kind of bugged me that the only one that's easy to find now is Michelin, which I don't think is aimed at Chicagoans at all. It's aimed at people who are going to be in the city for a short time. Mm-hmm. They want to have absolutely guaranteed blue chip experiences, spending a lot of money. And I've never found Michelin that helpful in other cities. It's just not the way that I approach them. So I just thought Chicago needed a guidebook that was, it was more attuned to how I would want to eat if I came here.
You say you're not a reviewer, quote.
Oh, in this case, I am. I'm not a person who writes the, you know, the Phil Vitale kind of review that's, that goes through everything and sort of ticks off all the boxes. I find that hard to write. You know, a lot of these reviews are really quite short. I mean,
yeah, right.
Know, two or three lines, if it sums it up well, that's all you need.
And then you end each one with what to order.
Well, and that's really a big thing. I mean, it, particularly in certain cuisines, you know, Chinatown, there's so much new, pretty much authentically immigrant food in Chinatown. How do you know what to get? You know, how do you go into those places and have any idea? So, I mean, not that I'm an expert on that by any means, but I've been pretty good at synthesizing what I read about and what I've tried myself and all that, and can give you at least some starting points so you can walk in there without being totally clueless and have your first meal and start to see what the place is about.
Do you do this by yourself? Do you bring a staff with you?
My son, who's sitting over there, yeah, has been on thousands of these adventures over the years.
Has he really?
Yeah. Yeah. It was a beautiful day when he really decided that he loved Chinese food. And so he didn't just get dragged along to eat white rice, but actually would pick things out to order himself. So
do people know you? You come in and, I mean, do you take notes or do you wait till you get home? What's your
You know what I do a lot of times is I snap the pictures, which used to be conspicuous and is now totally normal.
Yeah, right.
But that's kind of my way of taking notes, and then I can reconstruct what that was when I get home or something like that. I mean, one of the things I do with the book is I do spend a certain amount of time at the end comparing my pictures to what's on the menu and the pictures that people have posted at Yelp and things like that to make sure that the things I liked are what I think they are.
So how do you rate them? Tell us what number one is this year.
Number one is Monteverde. That's the restaurant started by Sarah Grunberg, who you may remember. She's still, I think, Chicago's only... No, she didn't win Top Chef. She came in second or third. But she's one of the top Italian chefs in Chicago. She was at Spiaggia for years and years. But I really like Monteverde. I think it's a really, really good example of what Chicago does well, which is, one, it's not all that expensive. I mean, it's a nice night out, but it's not as expensive as Spiaggia. And also, she put woks in her Italian restaurant because she liked the way that pasta works in a wok. So she's not afraid to experiment with things like that and, you know, do things a little different. And that's just kind of cool. That's like Chicago spirit.
I like what you say about Purple Pig. Now, Purple Pig is number 16. You're north at 500 North, but you say, talking your own words, the downtown hustle and bustle. And
What did I say?
Yeah, it's just...
Well, yeah, it's my first recommendation downtown. Great advertisement for Chicago cooking, direct, Italian-tinged, and unfussy. But it's also impressive how they handle the never-ending stream of diners in a tiny little place. They're the city restaurant that works and wows.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
That was pretty good.
Yeah, yeah, that's why I picked it. So how do you slot these? I mean, do you juggle them around each year?
Or? Yeah, I mean...
Blackbird is number 11.
What
was that last year?
I think it was number 9 or 10 last year. It's not anything that Blackbird did. You know, it's really... There's no science to the numbers. That's kind of pretend. I think, you know, sometimes I put things together just because I like them being next to each other. I mean, there's a place that has a fancy grill and a barbecue place on the south side and an Indian place that has a grill all next to each other. And that's because I think they're kind of interesting to think about and compare as you go through the book. So, yeah, don't take the numbers any too seriously.
Now, in the back, it's interesting, like kind of an index thing. You have restaurants by location, and just glancing at it, are there hot neighborhoods? I mean, you got a lot of Logan Square here.
Yeah.
You guys don't live in Logan Square, do you?
Not far away. Okay. But, yeah, I live in Roscoe Village where no one opens a restaurant because they always go to Logan Square.
Yeah.
But, no, it's... I mean, there's definitely the West Loop and Logan Square are the hot areas. There's no question of that. But part of the point of the book is to explore what there is in all the neighborhoods. You may not find a fancy restaurant in a lot of those neighborhoods, but there's usually something that they do. There's Mexican or Chinese or something in that area that's worth checking out.
I was married once, and years ago after, we had a nice divorce, we're still good friends, but after we split up, I got a little loft down by Vivo in the West Loop, and there's nothing there.
Right.
It was really, really, the Vivo was the only thing there. He was like the first guy in there, I think. I mean, there was a bakery, I lived on Green Street, there's a bakery right across the street. I mean, that was a long time ago, it was like 25 years ago. But where I'm going with that, you do have a lot of West Loop, and it's some of the things that I was going to ask you in the next segment about challenges for 2018, 2019, is about, you know, real estate. And I mean, what if I wanted to open a restaurant in the West Loop right now?
I mean, I think a lot of the smaller places are getting priced out. We've definitely seen closings from those. I mean, it's a real, you know, go big or go home neighborhood at this point. If you're Boca Group and you're opening Belmore, you can do it. But the little guy who wants to have a 60-seat restaurant, that's really tough right now.
Is that true in a lot of pockets of Chicago, or is it just the West Loop?
No, I think it's becoming more true in Logan Square. And that's one of the things that's interesting is Logan Square sort of split off. You know, it's like mitosis, you know. Another piece of Logan Square split off, and there's that strip on Armitage that has like Giant and Das Urban Cantina and things like that. And that's, you know, I think a reaction to the fact that the core of Logan Square was getting more and more expensive, so people sort of created a second restaurant neighborhood in that area.
How adventurous are the clients and the customers? Now I live on the kind of the border Ukrainian Village in Humboldt Park, and there's some restaurants that have, you know, on Chicago Avenue when you go towards Feed. There's a lot of restaurants that have come and go. I mean, are those neighborhood places, or are people going to go seek out places if they're...
I think people have gotten a lot more adventurous than they used to be. And I think it's one of the things, I mean, talking about LTH Forum, when I was on that originally, I mean, we were really urban explorers daring to go to these scary parts of town. And now I think it's very common that, you know, people have no problem. I mean, if you look at all the places that are opening in Pilsen, and that's just... it's just another place you go, and nobody thinks of that. The phobia about the South Side, which was so common among Northsiders when I moved here, you know, finally seems to be being conquered.
Yeah.
So,
okay, I want to talk about the future after this break. We'll talk about some of the trends. You predict the future for us in 2018.
Sure.
We'll be back with more on Nocturnal Journal on WGN. Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN 720, here with Michael Gebert, editor of Food Editor 99. Where can people find Food Editor 99?
Well, on Amazon, like everything. And the other thing is I actually got it in my neighborhood bookstore the other day, which is Roscoe Books on Roscoe, just west of Damon, I think 2142, but don't hold me to that. Nice little neighborhood bookstore, and I'm going to work on getting it into a few others like that.
And you got a website?
Well, Food Editor is my online magazine about food, so there's articles about all kinds of things related to Chicago food there.
And you're right. This will fit your glove compartment. How many pages? It's really not, I can't see the pages, but it's like 99 restaurants.
Yeah, it's about 80 pages.
80 pages. That works out really well. So what was your best meal in 2017?
You know, there's, talking about the West Loop, one of the great restaurants right now that opened this year is called Proxy, P-R-O-X-I. And it's a good example of what's going on in Chicago food, which is it's a fancy, very chic downtown restaurant, and yet they're doing a lot of Asian-flavored things. There's a lot of Thai, Vietnamese, Indian kind of flavors in the foods. And one of the only things that I can remember ordering twice at the same meal was fish collar with a nam prik sauce, which is a Thai kind of spicy, funky sauce, and, you know, freshly fried fatty fish collar, halibut or something. It was just awfully good, so we just had to have it again 30 seconds after finishing the previous one. So
do you see any trends, I mean, as far as cuisine or is anything, you know, my brother was telling me there was a vegan soul food that's opening up in Nashville. You know, I know there's one in Detroit.
There's a couple of them on the south side, actually. That's an interesting thing. There hasn't been written about that much, but it's happening in the African-American community. People are trying to get soul food away from being so fatty.
Yeah, right.
And do it either vegan or at least like substituting turkey for pork. Which I've had turkey at some barbecue restaurants. I mean, it's nice. It's not pork, but...
Yeah. You have... I'm thumbing through the book here. You have one soul food place.
Yeah, Five Loaves Eatery.
Yeah. What number is that? I'm looking for it.
I think it's in the 20s.
Oh, it came up that high.
I don't have that memorized. I thought. I mean, it's just a wonderful place. So sweet. I wrote an article about it and called them the nicest restaurant in Chicago.
Here it is. Number 28. 405 East 75th Street.
Yeah, it's right next, you know, it's just within a block or two of Lem's, if people know that down there. But yeah, I mean, just a really sweet family-run place. But really high-quality food. I mean, it's not like the buffet kind of soul food place, but they fresh fry, like fried chicken that's been marinated or brined for like 18 hours beforehand, things like that.
You know, what to order? Fried chicken, po' boy sandwich, shrimp and grits, weekends only, salmon croquettes, lemon poppy seed pancakes. That's good. Anything that comes with a biscuit.
Yeah.
You know, when I did the soul food book, one thing I learned, like, I go back to the days of Army and Lou's and stuff, and I was told from people that as the neighborhoods changed and residents left, a lot of these classic soul food places, had to close down. So you say this is family run. Again, where does their clientele come from? Is it people from the neighborhood? Do people search it out?
Yeah, it's definitely from the neighborhood. You get a lot of what you'd call church ladies there. You know, and a lot of them seem to know the, you know, it's the kind of place where you see the rapport and the back and forth between staff and the customers. I will say that when I took like three or four white friends there, we were somewhat conspicuous in the neighborhood.
Sure,
so.
Yeah. And so you've done this 2 years?
Yeah, this is the revised edition.
What's been one of the great surprises? What's been one of the great learning experiences for you about Chicago that you didn't know until you started doing this?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, I just see a lot of trends kind of moving along. You know, certainly the increasing influence of Asian flavors in everything. I mean, it's kind of been an open secret for a long time that that's what chefs eat after their shift. They may cook French, but then they go eat sushi.
Yeah.
And so they're finally bringing that into the food, and I think that's really great. I don't know, you know, and I think also one of the things that's great that's happening is there's a lot of second generation kids going into the restaurant business. The parents may have opened the old Chinese restaurant that had the Zodiac menus and all of that, but the kids want to open something hipper and cooler and not necessarily in the neighborhood where they grew up. So you're seeing a lot of these more progressive Asian restaurants of various kinds that have cocktail menus and all that kind of stuff.
What do you think of the term foodie?
You know, what else are you going to call it? A lot of people hate that word. Well, it's like, you got to have a noun. You need something to call us.
Because I think I'm a retired foodie. I used to like to go out and find new places and stuff. But, you know, and I'm getting older, and I told you, I got intimidated by some of this stuff. You know, I'm not going to be a guy who's going to get a reservation to eat at a restaurant. I'm not going to stand in line to go to a restaurant. I was showing you Phil Vitale's article about closings mar cities. Fine dining landscape. This came out at the beginning of the year, but is there one of the things he points out? Are there too many hot and new trendy restaurants? And what about the standards? I still like La Scarola. I still like Miller's Pub. You know.
Yeah, I mean, I love if places can sort of get past the real danger point of like 6 to 10 years. Then they start to become classic, and that's pretty cool. But when they
That's Rich Melman right there.
Yeah, calling me. Watch it.
Yeah.
Now, Sorry, I lost my train of thought.
No, we were just talking about everything being so hot and trendy, and
it definitely puts a lot
of pressure. As just a regular
guy,
I get intimidated sometimes to go out to a fancy or a nice restaurant.
And it definitely puts pressure on the restaurants that they kind of need to be new, and then they have a 4, 5, 6 year life, and then they're over. And when I interviewed Rick Bayless about Frontera's 30-year anniversary, said that was one of the reasons he picked Chicago over Los Angeles, was in Los Angeles, you're pretty much dead after 4 or 5 years. You needed to just tear it down and start over. And in Chicago, you could have a restaurant that could grow organically over 30 years and improve and change over time, but not have to burn it down and start over every once in a while.
Fascinating stuff. Fascinating stuff. I want to ask you, I got about a minute left. Would you do this? I was thinking about this when I was looking at this last night. Would you do this in other cities?
Well, I don't know other cities. I'd have to move there and learn it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's one of those things that it would be kind of fun to do. I mean, I love all the – there's so much new immigrant food in L.A. It would be fun to start over there, but, you know, not in this lifetime.
You want to go to Milwaukee? We go to Milwaukee.
We do go to Milwaukee regularly.
You could do Milwaukee. That's close enough. You wouldn't have to move. So tell us one more time where to get the food at her.
Amazon, or check it out at Roscoe Books, 2142 probably West Roscoe.
Well, thanks a lot. You got to come back sometime.
All right, thank
you. Bring some food. We'll have some food next time, okay?